musician, teacher, and radio host. Admission is free.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
And a very pleasant good morning and welcome to this edition of Education Matters here on WGTD HD. I'm your host this morning, Steve Brown. Students in schools with the highest levels of instructional leadership, and this means school leaders who have an instructional focus, and teacher leadership perform at least 10 percentage points higher in both mathematics and English language arts proficiency on their state assessments when compared to schools with the lowest levels. This is according to a brand new report released by the New Teacher Center in partnership with Dr. Richard Ingersoll of the Consortium for Policy Research in Education at the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education. In segment one, my guest will be Dr. Richard Ingersoll of the University of Pennsylvania. And he is the one who analyzed all of these data for this very important study. In segment two of Education Matters, my guest from the New Teacher Center will be Dr. Lynn Kep, who is Senior Vice President of Strategic Partnerships, and also Colleen Oliver, Vice President at the New Teacher Center.
And I'm very pleased to have as my first guest in this first segment Dr. Richard Ingersoll. And Dr. Ingersoll has taught in both public and private schools for a number of years. He obtained his PhD in sociology from the University of Pennsylvania and also was a faculty member in sociology at the University of Georgia. And currently he is the Board of Overseers Chair and Professor of Education and Sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Ingersoll, welcome to Education Matters.
Thank you, Steve. I'm glad to be on the show.
First of all, your background is very interesting. I always like to start out Education Matters when I have a guest who has not been a guest before. If you could maybe tell our audience where you grew up, where you went to high school, and how you got interested in the field that you are currently serving.
I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. My father was a scientist for the DuPont Company. And then I went to college as far away as I possibly could. I went to University of California, San Diego. And then I had a stint where I lived in Western Canada, and that's where I first started school teaching. And I did that for several years, and then I moved back to Delaware and Pennsylvania and taught both public and private schools for a number of years. And I have to say it wasn't a pleasant experience moving back. That the teaching job was very different in Delaware and Pennsylvania than what I'd experienced in Western Canada, and I'm very sorry to say that it wasn't as good as a job.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing was this whole issue of how much voice and say teachers would have in the decisions in the building. And eventually I left teaching, and I've been studying these kinds of things ever since.
In an article that appeared in Education Week on October 26th of this year, and was written by Madeline Will, and the headline is, "Teacher Leadership is Linked to Higher Student Test Scores in this Study." And, of course, everyone's always interested in test scores and what we can do to impact test scores. And the first paragraph or so says, students who go to schools where their teachers have a leadership role in decision making, they perform significantly better on state tests. So before we get into your study, before we drill down into your study, what was it that caused your interest in getting involved and leading this study at the University of Pennsylvania and others who were involved? And I'm wondering, as I ask the question, whether or not your direct experiences in Western Canada had something to do with it.
Well, it did. I've always been interested in this issue of how much say and voice and authority teachers do and don't have, particularly beyond the classroom issues. And as I was saying earlier, when I taught in Western Canada, teachers seemed to have a real voice, and where I taught in Delaware and Pennsylvania, they didn't. But of course, you never know. Maybe it's just the particular schools you were in. And so, but when I left teaching and I got a PhD and I started studying this very issue, how much say do teachers do and don't have, and how does it vary across schools, and does it make any difference, and also should they? I mean, after all, it's our children. Maybe we want to not give the teachers a whole lot of say. Maybe we want the parents to run things. I mean, it's a controversial issue. I mean, who makes the key decisions in the schools as to you know, rules for behavior for students, for instance? And so it's a topic that's long been of interest to me. And then I had the opportunity to this new database to study and see, well, the buildings in which teachers have more say, do the students score better on tests? Or maybe they do, maybe they don't. Let's do some data analysis.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that really caught my attention immediately was the scope of the study in terms of it covered a four-year period from 2011 to 2015, but the data were from a huge number of teachers, close to a million teachers in about 25,000 schools in 16 states. Now, when you look at the studies that you have done and you have been involved in and dissertation committees that you sit on and dissertation committees that I sit on, I mean, the scope of this is absolutely remarkable, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's a real opportunity from a researcher's viewpoint because this is what we call large-scale data. And, you know, you're not asking a few people in a few schools. This is across 16-some states, and it's almost a million teachers. And so it's big picture. And that's what we're interested in. What's the big picture across as wide? I mean, it's not the whole nation, but it's a lot of it. And that's what we're interested in. And of course, with data like that, you know, yeah, you might have a few odd balls and odd answers here and there, but those get evened out just because of the sheer quantity of individuals who have answered the survey.
Maybe if you could give us an overview of what some of the key findings were in this study, and as you're doing so, maybe highlight some points in those findings that really jumped out at you, that you actually said, wow.
Well, we ran these statistical analyses to see whether, to what extent buildings varied in the amount of input teachers have into these decisions, and then whether this is related to the test scores in the building. And we found out, yes, there's a relationship. That is, buildings with more teacher leadership, more input into decisions by teachers, have significantly better test scores. But then we drilled down and looked at, well, are there some areas of teacher leadership, of teacher input into decisions, that seem to have more bang for buck, you might say? And we found, yes, indeed, some of them did. And the two that really jumped out were, the first is, how much say do the teachers have in the policies and procedures surrounding student behavior and discipline, those types of things?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm a former teacher. These are key issues. You know, is the teacher simply kind of a police person implementing rules made in the state capitol as to what behavior goes, or can the teachers actually have input? You know, what do we want the norms and the values to be, and what do we want the sticks and carrots, the rewards and sanctions to be? And it turns out when teachers have more say, the scores are much better in the building, which is – that's very interesting. That was the strongest effect – is the term we use, that the strongest correlate, the factor that had the largest relationship to improved test scores was how much say teachers had over these behavioral discipline issues. To me, that was a very fascinating finding.
When you look at that, as far as teachers being directly involved in decision-making and specifically being involved in behavioral issues and policies, what does your gut tell you as to why that element has a direct impact on student achievement?
Well, my gut take is that these are kids, and whether you like it or not, as a teacher, you're part parent, and you're not just teaching history or mathematics. You're teaching, you're modeling, you're doing a lot of behavioral enforcement, whether you like it or not, whether it's conscious or not. And so the issue is, can teachers have some say in these issues? It's almost like, can teachers have some say in the climate, the ethos, the culture of the building? Or, again, as I mentioned before, are teachers really sort of these low-level people that their job is to implement decisions made by others, maybe upstream? And in this case, it's just crucial. You know, I mean, there's 1,001 rules in these, you know. Well, it used to be, you know, can students smoke cigarettes? You know, I taught in a senior high school, so now it might be cell phone use, or what kinds of clothing is okay or not okay, and what about language? What about swearing? And, you know, look, there's hundreds of these things, and a lot of times teachers are in a situation where the rule is made by someone, and the teacher may not like the rule, may not agree with it, may think it's a stupid rule, but their job may be to enforce it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a pleasant position to be in. You know, when you're on the ground like that, it's the data seem to suggest, my take is, that teachers really want to have an input into just what are going to be the norms and values in the building.
And in this article by Madeline Will, and I mentioned her name again because it was an extraordinarily well-written article in Education Week, and I've read many of her articles. One of the things she writes, which comes from the study, she says, while the study shows a correlation, not a causation, it backs up what teacher empowerment advocates have said for years, and that is, teachers are closest to students, so they know what students need to improve. So as a former school administrator, as a former principal and a district-level administrator, and now I'm a school board member, what do we need to do as educators to turn things around in our public schools? I mean, this to me is almost a quintessential question. What do we need to do to turn things around so the main policymaker, the main decision maker, is not just going to be the principal or the superintendent or even the school board, but rather to get teachers more involved in what happens on a day-to-day basis based on these remarkable findings in your study?
Well, that's a good question. How to get from A to B? I'm not quite sure I can answer that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have this research. I mean, one thing it shows is that schools do vary dramatically. Some schools, it's very collegial. It's collective decision-making. The teachers, I guess there's a school improvement committee in the building, and teachers are on it, and they're making a lot of these decisions. And others are very kind of a top-down, and the principal's maybe the person at the top, and they unilaterally make decisions. And there's the whole range in between. Now, how to get one model to move towards the other, I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I'm the sort of guy who does the data and says, well, if you do move, it does suggest that things are going to get better. I should say it's not a panacea, and your earlier point was good. These are correlations. The data don't actually say, look, if you did X, you'd get Y. What the data say is that schools that do X have Y, and there's a strong connection between the two. So that's sort of a fine distinction between what we call correlation and causation. But the data really kind of suggest making those changes. And, I'm not quite sure how to get there. Maybe leadership programs in colleges and universities, like where you teach, could kind of stress these sorts of things. I'm not quite sure.
If more people knew about this study, and the remarkable, and I use that word, and I don't use that word lightly, by the way, the remarkable findings in your study, that the role of teachers as leaders can have this sort of effect, and not just in test scores, but I'm sure, and I know this, that it would have to be true as a former classroom teacher like yourself, improving school climate and improving relations with the community and with parents. I'm just wondering why we don't do more in the area of teacher leadership, either in our public schools or at our universities.
You know, it's a great question. I think the answer lies in history, that when we invented the public school system a bit over a century ago, it modeled itself after industry. In fact, it looked to Henry Ford's assembly line as sort of an exemplar of how to run an efficient operation. And the model was very top-down, and it wasn't entirely bad. I mean, these are our children. We wanted command and control. We wanted to know what these teachers were doing, and we didn't want to give them a lot of leeway. But the problem with that model is that, and you mentioned this earlier, I mean, the teachers are sort of on the ground. They're where the rubber hits the road. They're the front line, and kids vary. And it turns out to do that job well, the data suggests, you need to give these people some discretion and some leeway. That, you know, if you want to have a sort of one-size-fits-all standardized model, that maybe works in the auto industry, but it doesn't work in the educational industry, and we have a lot of research showing this. Now, I should add that this doesn't mean that you just let teachers do willy-nilly what they want. This is all in a context of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is, it's like professions, it's like medicine. The idea is you give these people the training, the authority, the autonomy, and the time to do their job, and then you hold them accountable. You don't do one without the other. And what we've had in this country with the Growth of Accountability and No Child Left Behind Act, we had this sort of increased accountability and scrutiny of teachers, but we didn't give them any more leeway. It was sort of a one-sided thing. And what these data are suggesting, we do it in a more balanced way.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that you're quoted in the Madeline Will article, you say that it's not a surprise in the viewpoint of professionals, the ideal, the theory behind professions, whether it's medicine, academia, dentistry, is that these are experts. You don't micromanage them. You give them a lot of voice in what they do, and then you hold them, as you were just saying, you hold them accountable, and you do both. As you look at future research with respect to this study, is there going to be a follow-up study that you're going to be involved in?
Well, we certainly want to do more drilling down. We felt like this was a first take. And so we want to look, there's more data in this in the survey that was done. We sort of pulled this one section. So we want to do a whole lot more because, you know, these findings were just so interesting and revealing. We'd like to do more drill down and also maybe get at the question you asked earlier. I mean, which kinds of schools are more likely to implement this type of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And how successfully can they do so? That gets at the question of how to get from A to B. And so we'd like to go in that direction.
Sure. And you know, I always like to ask this question at the end, and that is there something that I should have asked you about this study, about this remarkable study and the findings that I didn't ask that you think our listeners should know?
Well, one of our findings was that some of the things that seemed to have the, so to speak, the biggest bang for buck were the things that schools least often do. On the other hand, some of the things where, for instance, schools would give teachers a lot of say had less bang for buck. I mean, there was an interesting lesson there for school management and school leaders that, you know, some of these things. So schools often give teachers plenty of discretion around the techniques they use in the classroom and the choice of tests and textbooks. You know, that varies too. But it turns out that's less connected to higher test scores and some of these things like the student discipline policies, where teachers often have little input into those. Those get your biggest bang for buck. So that was an interesting thing, that some of the things the data suggested were the best to do are often the least often done.
Mm-hmm. If someone wanted to read more about your study, how could they do so in terms of a link on the internet?
Well, they certainly could. I have a web page, and I can send that to you.
Okay.
It's gse.upenn.edu/faculty/Ingersoll.
Okay.
That's rather a mouthful. Or they could shoot me an email, rmi@upenn.edu.
Okay, wonderful. And also the newteachercenter.org site, and they have,
yes,
of course, the summary of the study.
Yes.
Dr. Ingersoll, I want to thank you for taking your time today, but even more so for the work that you did on this study. And I know there were others involved in the study, but again, just remarkable findings. And I'm already talking about it in my classes. In fact, I even talked about it at a school board meeting on the board that I represent, in terms of we need to do more to get teachers engaged in leadership and do so in a way where no one is going to feel threatened.
Yes, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be, you know, giving teachers more say, and that's going to undermine the principal or something like that.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be done in that fashion. But thank you very much for using – I mean, it's always gratifying that someone uses the research. That's terrific, and I'm highly appreciative that you've been doing that.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Glad to be on the show.
And we continue now with Education Matters here on WGTD HD. And I'm your host this morning, Steve Brown. And we've just listened to Richard Ingersoll, who is – with the University of Pennsylvania, and we talked about the results of the study on school leadership. And I thought it would now be important to talk about the organization that put all of this together. And I'm very pleased to welcome into Education Matters now Lynn Kep, who is the Senior Vice President of Program Innovations and Operations for the New Teacher Center, and we'll find out more about the New Teacher Center in a moment. And also Colleen Oliver, who's Vice President, and she is leading efforts to expand, deepen, and scale NTC's school leadership services to further support teacher development, So, Lynn and Colleen, welcome to Education Matters.
Thank you for having us.
Lynn, why did the New Teacher Center get involved with this study?
Well, thank you. We've been a New Teacher Center hosting and providing the TEL, Teaching, Empowering, Leading, and Learning Survey nationally for many years. And we have this robust data set, but we really also have wondered and been asked, how do teachers and school leaders really matter? You know, we know school leadership matters. We know that the teachers leave schools where they feel they're not supported by their administration. But there's questions about, do these characteristics actually tie in any way to student achievement? And New Teacher Center, we just completed, or we're in the middle of a study. At the time we commissioned this study, we were in the middle of validating our induction model to see, does teacher induction actually result in changes in student learning? If you do certain activities in your induction program, do those students have higher student learning? So we were on this path to really see, can we think about certain characteristics and moves of teacher leadership, induction, and mentoring with our ultimate outcome is, if we're not impacting student learning and student outcomes, then maybe it's something, you know, we shouldn't be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But we really wanted to think about that and how can you build that case. So this study really allowed us to look at, it's a huge data set, but thinking about these criteria of teacher leadership and school leadership and how do those tie to student achievement and the importance of both, as Colleen talked about, being together.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just an or, it's an and. And our belief is that when all those people, the teacher leaders, the school leaders, the district leaders, the classroom instructors are all going in the same direction with the same vision and support and development, that students will succeed and it'll be outstanding. So we're trying to put those data pieces together to see how, if you, you know, connect A, B, and C, do you get a much larger result.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we approached Richard and his outstanding analysis to really think about what can we say, what factors do matter, what comes out when we look at this large data set. And this was just the first pass at the data. We may continue to do other sets of analysis on this large data set in the future.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the TEL survey, and that's the Teaching, Empowering, Leading, and Learning survey. Maybe if either you or Lynn could maybe talk a little more about that and why this particular survey is important and why you're actually, you know, why you're actually using it.
Well, certainly. This is Lynn, and I'll just, if that's okay, Colleen, share.
Sure.
The TEL survey allows building-based educators, all the educators as well as administrators and people, to fill out it's a perception survey of working conditions, and there are 9 constructs, and educators complete the survey, and it's done with an anonymous code, and if there's more than 50% of people responding in a building, you actually get results at the building level, and they roll up at the district, and many states offer this. The survey can be administered by a school, by a district, by a state, and the idea is to look at the conditions and the working conditions in the building. Do what the educators say align with what the administrators say? And is there a crosswalk or a mapping between the validity between the working conditions items and achievement in the schools? And thinking about that. And you'll find that places with working conditions that are not positive have, as Richard said, lower teacher leadership and school leadership, but they also typically have lower student achievement. So it's trying to gather this data, but the goal is for schools and districts to use this data to analyze what's the gap, what is the perception and the working conditions, and how can districts take action and schools take action to plan to address these areas where the conditions might not be as favorable as other places in a district.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really designed because we know the environment matters, right? The classroom environment matters for kids and teachers. The environment in a school matters for the adults in the building, and the environment in the district matters for the adults working in that system.
Yeah, and you know, as I mentioned before, what initially caught my eye, as I mentioned in my conversation with Richard, the wonderful article that Madeline Will wrote in Education Week, October 26th, where she talks about the study and the fact that this was a four-year study, data from about a million teachers in 25,000 schools in 16 states. And Lynn, my question for you, actually Colleen, I'm sorry, with the involvement that you had with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and also when you did some work in the Seattle Public Schools and KIPP, maybe talk a little about KIPP and what kind of relationship you see with KIPP schools, which certainly has gotten a lot of publicity over the last 5 to 7 years, and the impact that you see with regards to school leadership and student achievement.
Right. Well, great, thanks. You know, actually, I would say, you know, I draw on all of the experiences that I had, both when I was a school leader myself and really, you know, saw results of students move at an accelerated pace when it actually involved teacher leaders. So, I mean, that was the beginning of a journey, you know, both in the charter sector, in the regular traditional district sector, working, you know, at the Gates Foundation, in the Chicago public schools, and in Memphis public schools. And then, you know, culminating when I went to L.A. and led a network, co-led a network of turnaround schools that were in high-needs communities and in part of the Los Angeles Unified School District, so East L.A., South L.A., and Watts. And our theory of action of how to turn around schools was to, you know, really invest a lot of time and professional learning opportunities for school leaders, but simultaneously grow and build a cadre of teacher leaders in each of the schools, and then to marry the two efforts together to really build a distributed leadership model at each of the schools. And so, you know, where I've seen successes and also, you know, where I saw challenges, both as a practitioner myself and also in leadership roles working with principals, is when those two pieces are working together and really focusing on that common instructional vision, everybody holding themselves to high standards so that the expectations for students are high as well as for the teachers and the school leaders, and where everybody is really thinking and has the mindset of continuous improvement, that those are the pieces that actually move schools forward and ultimately networks and systems of schools. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I joined NTC, Richard was already, you know, underway with his analysis of the Tell survey. I was drawing and designing our school leadership program based on a lot of my own personal experiences, but also research from the field. And so it was validating to us as the findings came out from Richard's study that some of the key components of our school leadership program with NTC also aligned well with those. So we really think about, you know, our audiences, specifically principals and district leaders, but then teacher leaders also, but starting with principals, and really thinking about building their capacity around distributed leadership, really thinking about how they are coaching teachers alongside with teacher leaders, that one alone is not enough, but doing it as a team, really thinking about how to work as a network so that they can keep on pushing their own learning and learn from each other, but doing that then in the continuous learning cycles, which really validates, you know, what Richard was saying in terms of teachers need to be involved in the, you know, the school improvement. And we really see that through an instructional leadership team, a distributed leadership model. And those are core components of how we're field testing right now our new NTC school leadership program. So it's another way for us to test out some of the findings that Richard already came up with, but is also drawing on a lot of experiences that I have had, you know, over the last 30 years.
And if you're just joining us on Education Matters, I'm talking with Lynn Kepp and Colleen Oliver, and they're with the New Teacher Center. And One of the things I wanted to ask you, Lynn, and that is a study of this size and a four-year study with a million teachers, maybe if you can talk a bit about how this got funded. And I think it's always important that we give recognition to those organizations who provide the funding, because without funding, none of this would be happening, especially when the results and the findings of a study are as significant as this.
Yes, well, thank you. This is very exciting. This is support. So we actually, the TEL survey was administered through state. So the survey had been administered, and it was the analysis of this rich data set and to really think about what are trends and patterns from this, you know, great national sample. And so we actually submitted a grant to the Carnegie Corporation of New York, who generously funded the University of Pennsylvania and Richard Ingersoll and his team and some of our own staff to do this analysis. And if you think about it, you know, at this scale, across states, looking at student achievement, this is quite an undertaking to pull this off. But we were very fortunate because the surveys had already been administered, and that was now the analysis part that we were partnering with Richard and his team to do. So the Carnegie Corporation generously funded this, and we're thrilled with the opportunity to share this data and to inform the field that, yes, these things do matter. And for educators, it's kind of like a, you know, duh, no-brainer, you know, that, yes, we know these things matter for student achievement, but it's really great to have such a large data set and study validate what has been in the hearts and minds of educators across the country for many years.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is then thinking about those findings and then how do you put those into action as you're working, you know, with school leaders and with district leaders. You know, that's what we're trying to do in the field test. And fortunately, you know, the Carnegie Corporation also is helping us field test that on the ground as we're, you know, launching our new school leadership program. So, you know, just doubly indebted to them for their strong support for thinking about teacher development, but also school leadership and the key role that principals play in terms of teacher development and teacher leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And the final important thing that I forgot to add in, this is Lynn, is that this research does show, though, that not all students have access to these high-quality conditions,
mm-hmm.
to places where school leaders and teacher leaders, and at New Teacher Center, our primary focus is going to the places of greatest need first and figuring out how do we focus time, energy, and efforts to have those students have access to high-quality education. So while this study validates that, it also validates what many, many people in schools and districts know. Access to equitable education, we're still not there. We have a long way to go. And this study validates that. And so what are we doing to help solve this problem, looking at data and figuring out how through Colleen's work, through induction, through instructional coaching, how can we develop those educators in the system and develop that system to make it high quality for all?
Mm-hmm. And you know, and that leads me, I guess, my last major question before I just ask a bit about the new teacher center. And that is, as I had mentioned in my conversation with Richard, I teach at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh in our educational leadership program, which essentially is training teachers to become school principals and at the doctoral level, principals to become superintendents. This whole area of teachers as leaders, I know there are programs like that around the country at universities, usually at the master's level. Do you see, perhaps through this research, maybe a rekindling of programs being established or restarted? Because I know a lot of programs were shut down because of budget issues and things of that nature.
I mean, I think that teacher leadership has you know, always been a successful strategy and something that many you know, principals, districts, schools are aspiring to. I think where we've seen challenges is actually how do you provide the opportunities for teachers and school leaders to continuously have high-quality learning opportunities, to continue to build their own capacity, to learn how to work most effectively together so that it's a collective effort in terms of, again, pointing the direct, you know, the instructional vision in the right way and really thinking about the different roles and how everybody is, a part of that shared accountability of developing and continuously improving. So, I mean, I think it's key to have, you know, specific programs and to emphasize that both in teacher prep programs and principal prep programs. But I also think it's the work of being in districts and being in schools and being in networks of schools. And so that it never stops. It's a continuous process. And from my perspective, we have to give more opportunities for that type of learning, at the ground level where the work is actually happening. And that's our attempt to also think about kind of the systems change, how do districts organize to provide those opportunities for principals and teacher leaders? Are there pathways that teachers can see that there are things they can do? They don't always have to become a principal. They can become a teacher leader. They can become a coach. They become, you know, a department chair or a course lead. That there are multiple ways to build that teacher leadership, and some of that can be in the preparation programs, but also I think that has to be on the ground as the work unfolds.
Sure.
And the key part of that, as Colleen said, was, yes, you can have that foundational learning and coursework, but teacher leaders need to not only have expertise in teaching students, they need to have their skills developed to be working with adults. I think all, you know, school leaders, and that actually is difficult and a separate set of skills and learning to do. And we spend a lot of time and energy helping think about how you develop adults, what are tools and processes to build independent habits of mind and reflective thought when working with those adults. And that's key. And a huge learning from our I3 study was it's also critically important, as Colleen said, to go into the classrooms and work with those teacher leaders to coach and develop them while they're coaching other teachers. So it's not as simple as, you know, receiving a degree and being appointed a teacher leader. To actually have an influence and an impact, you need to have development and feedback, learning, growth, and tools to help implement that work. So teacher leadership is complex and needs to be thought of as such if you want to have high-level outcomes that impact student achievement.
And I'm reading from the back page of the study on school leadership, and where it talks about the new teacher center. And very specifically, it was founded by teachers back in 1998, and it was built and it was created to build capacity within districts and district partners to drive student learning, educator effectiveness, teacher and leadership development. And certainly this study and all the data that are being analyzed and will be dipped into again and reanalyzed is showing that all to be very true. I would like to thank my guests on Education Matters today, Colleen Oliver and Lynn Kep from the New Teacher Center. And if you want more information about the center, if you want to learn more about all the exciting things going on, you can go to their website, which is newteachercenter.org. I want to thank both of you for taking your time, but even more importantly, for the incredible work that you and others with the NTC and all your collaborators are doing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having us on your show. Really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
On Education Matters this morning, we've looked at a brand new study looking at the impact of teacher leadership on student test scores. And this was done in conjunction with the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education and also the New Teacher Center located in Santa Cruz, California. for Education Matters and WGTDHD. I'm your host, Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTDHD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website.